Hi everyone, my name is Marshall and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, so what Jill was referencing is a story I've been telling, which is to me a metaphor for my journey through active alcoholism into early recovery and then into the surrender of being recovered. In the first part of the story 2 weeks ago, I talked about how it was where I was married for 13 years. My wife at the time went on a planned visit to Brazil for 2 months, where she's from, with my only child, my daughter Elizabeth, and she never returned. And that sent me in three and a half years of just active alcoholism, being alone with my disease and seeing no way out. In the second part of the story from last week, I had entered early recovery, and my first order of business was to the best of my ability, first try to see in any way, legally, to see my daughter, and second, be free of the marriage I was in. So, through the grace of God and this meeting in particular, I heard something called the takeaway prayer, which was, God, just leave me with everything I'm supposed to have and take away everything else. That's how I approached it with the lawyers. And when I did that, when I was willing to give away everything to the other side, her case just kind of crumbled in that she had no intention of letting me see her. But I wanted the financial things. And I had done everything possible, spent every penny I had trying to see her, even though I couldn't. But I was free. The second part of the objective, I guess, was complete, where I was free of now my ex-wife. And my plan from that day, this was 2014, going forward, was just to pray for my daughter, send love to my daughter, send gifts and postcards as I traveled around the world to her, just letting her know I'm there, not knowing if she ever would ever receive them or not. And that takes us to the third part of the story today, how it is now, or leading up to that anyways. So fast forward, that date was in April of 2014. Fast forward to April of 2018. I wake up on Easter Sunday of all days to an email of the likes I had never received before. It was an email directly from my daughter. It was her name, her email address. And it said something like, Dad, what's your telephone number? Although it had never changed. I need to speak to you. Please pick up. So I immediately emailed her, my telephone number is this. Can't wait to speak to you too, and of course I'll pick up. The next day it occurred to me, I think young people talk on WhatsApp at the time, so I registered my number with WhatsApp, or got the app, and then the following day she contacted me. And when she did, she was deeply, deeply emotional, with just tears. And the one thing I mostly remember, she said, Dad, why don't you want to be part of my life? Which was, of course, the complete opposite of what I wanted. To be fully involved in her life, I just didn't know how. So I started first to be defensive with her in saying a couple of things I had done. But at this time, I'd been in a long training program to be a life and health coach, and a lot of that's about active listening and powerful questions. So I took a breath. I got present, with a capital P, right? I just took a breath, centered myself, and go, what would I do? What would I do as a coach? And I just took what she said and I turned it around into a question. And I said, Elizabeth, how would you like me to be part of your life? And by this time, she had emotionally stabilized, got evened out. And she kind of got a little sassy with me, as a teenage girl would. And she said, for starters, you can call once a week. And you could come and see me. And I go, listen, the call, done deal, right? Of course I'll do that. We'll do that together every week. And then we'll have to work together. It's not just up to me if I can see there. But I'm willing to come see you. And I didn't put anything on her mother. I didn't say, I never through any of it said anything negative about her mother. And then as those weekly calls were happening, she started to tell me things like, hey, I got a tattoo, but I haven't told mommy, and stuff like that. So she was like really opening up with me. And one time she called, and she was very sad, kind of like the first time we had kind of reunited on the phone, crying profusely. And she said, Daddy, mommy says no one will ever love me. And I was like, That's a sick person, right? It's just a sick person. But I didn't say that to Elizabeth. It gave me the opportunity to say it. Whether it's yesterday, today, or tomorrow, you'll always be loved, and I'll always love you, and that type of thing. And I mentioned that, you know, just because somebody says something, it doesn't make it so, even though it's your mother. And it just gave me another opportunity to pray, not only for Elizabeth, but for her mother. To see that. But what it was a clue that something was going on there. And she started to mention, my daughter started to mention, she was spending more nights, time away. She's a 16-year-old girl, away with friends. And she was also telling me she had medical issues. And one time, it was, I thought it was funny at the time, not the event, but what my daughter chose to do. She was in a emergency room. I think she fainted. She had a lot of migraine issues, and she was going to the hospital a lot. And the doctor said, hey, we need to talk to your parents. And she had, they speak Portuguese over there. She had the doctor call me, so I'm talking to the Portuguese doctor. He goes, hey, we need you to come here to sign papers. And I go, that's, you know, that's probably not going to work because I'm here in America. Things like that. But it just, I got my daughter on the phone and said, hey, you have to call your mother about this. But she was getting more and more distant from her mother. And then it just worked out into her mother gave permission for her to come here for a visit, and she had to help with passports because my daughter has dual citizenship. So in 2018 we were she came here for the first time right for the holidays, and that's the first time I saw her, and we had a five week visit together, and it was just amazing, right? I had come from, I don't know if I'll see this child again. And then 9 years later, I had to be reunited with her. And then she went back, and now I armed her with a credit card, right? So she had a little bit of financial freedom, because it just didn't seem like things were going great with her mother, her home life. And then her mother started to write me and call me and kind of say things about her. And she couldn't handle her anymore. She said she's flunking out of school and all these bad things about her. And I didn't pay much mind to it, except, how can I support our daughter? And then my ex-wife said, she needs to come stay with you. And she did. She came and stayed with me in 2019. She's been living with me permanently from 2019. Early in that, one of the things that I just wanted to mention was, and one of the gifts I've received from sobriety is this gift of receiving, right? Because I can get my mind clear, and I can be still, and I can be present. I can receive things. And one thing, and it's the funniest thing that happens a couple times a year, is I'll receive a song. Like a song will come down from the heavens and into me, and I'll write it down. And early in my daughter's permanent now stay with me, I received the song, and I wrote it down, and I put it to piano, and I lyrics, the whole nine. So I told my daughter, "Hey, I wrote a song for you. Do you want to hear it?" And she goes, "Yeah, I do." And so I when I play, like, I'm not the greatest piano player or singer or writer of songs, none of that stuff. But I just, so it takes a lot of my focus when I do it. So I play the song for her, and I don't know what's going on because I'm really focused on it. I look over at her, and she's just completely filled with tears of joy and just really touched by this song. So I wrote down the first verse of it and the chorus of it for a particular reason, which I'll share in a moment. So the first verse goes like this: "You came into this world, 10 fingers, 10 toes. How you were made so perfect, the Lord only knows. 8 years together, then 9 away, a dad and his daughter, their love found a way. Now we're together, there's nothing for you to do, just float down the journey, to yourself be true. My heart is overflowing, I hope you feel it too, I'm back to glowing, and it's all because of you." And then it goes into a chorus. "Rest here, my daughter, now everything's okay. Rest here, my baby, and stay. I was so blessed when God sent you my way. Rest here, my baby, and stay." And the reason I share that is when I came in here, I had no relationship with God. I didn't speak about God, I just didn't know Him. And then now when these songs come, God is peppered throughout the song. So, when she first got here, there was a couple issues. She had these health issues with the migraines and other things. And that was my... Now I'm a health coach, right? I'm a certified health coach at this point. So I've learned a lot about just general health and nutrition and things like that. And she also... She didn't have a high school diploma, so education was an issue. So on the health front, I got her to a naturopath and an osteopath, right? Instead of taking her just getting... loading her up with super pills to take care of her migraines. Like, let's heal the problem. And slowly but surely, that began to work. I asked her early on, I said, "Hey, compared to..." It seemed terrible to me. It seemed like daily she would have these headaches, and they were just debilitating to her. I'd say, "Compared to how it was in Brazil, how are your headaches?" She goes, "Oh my God, it's so much better. Right? So it's like, okay, it's on a path of that. And she's gotten to a point today where it really is just manageable. It's minuscule to what it was. On the education front, I said, "Hey, listen, you could go to high school and finish up there." She's 18 at the time. "Or you could get your GED," and she chose GED. So I just loved and supported her through that, and she eventually got her GED. Around that time, COVID hit. She ended up going to community college. I didn't know what kind of, you know, brain power she had as far as the books went and stuff. And she got A's and B's in that first semester, and the next 3 semesters at community college, she got straight A's. And she was just on her list and all that stuff. And today, she's going to Montclair State University on campus. I went there for the first time yesterday, so I visited her, and she's doing just great. She, on her own, she got a job because she wanted to get a job, and she works with the children, little kids, and supporting them. A couple of things that came too, like that I was blessed to experience. She wasn't exposed to music. I come from a family, everybody but me are classical professional musicians in my family, and she wasn't exposed to it. So I started getting her a ukulele and guitar lessons eventually, and electric guitar and all that stuff. And she's just proficient, like, at playing music, right? She had never been exposed, and she can just play. It's beautiful. And I believe she can sing, but she won't do it for me. Her music teacher says she can. And then even bicycle riding, when COVID hit, I go, "Hey, do you know how to ride a bike?" She goes, "No." I go, "Oh my God." So I got 2 new bikes delivered in early COVID, and I was teaching my 18-year-old daughter how to ride a bike for the first time, so I had the experience of teaching my child how to ride a bike. So stuff like that, you know, just all tear-worthy for me, all of this stuff. And I would say, just to wrap up the story, her mother called me, and I don't really, I take the calls just to take them, Two things, actually. Her mother wrote, when she first came permanently, this bulleted email with all of these things that are wrong with our daughter and how it wasn't her fault. And I didn't really read the email, but I read the first couple and I got the gist of it. And I'm going to just see what I have to work with. It's kind of like when you get a new person in AA, right? You don't know what you're working with, right? So I didn't really put any credence into the email. But after a year or whatever, her mother called me and just told me how wonderful I am. She's going on and on about me. Now, I realize how sick the woman is, so I'm not taking anything into it, but it's just amazing what somebody makes choices at one phase of life and then completely changes it around. So that whole process, right, from 2009 to 2018 to see her again, it took 9 years, and it's because of AA I realized it's not in my time, and it's in God's time. And after that, the divorce was final in 2014. I was at peace. I did everything humanly possible, and I knew because of this program and my work in this program and the inner work I continue to do, and we're going to talk about today, that it was had nothing. I had no power. I had no power in this, and that's what happened, and that's the miracles of AA in my life. So when we finished up last time, we finished up with step 9, so we're going to go into step 10, 11, and 12. And the first thing I'd say about these steps is, right, some people call them maintenance steps. To me, they're growth steps. The most important work, when I finished up through 9, finished those steps, I knew I had a lot of work to do, and that work was continued inner work, continued inner growth, and continued relationship building with the God of my own understanding. And one of the things that I am pleased that I did is I did that work compulsively at first, meaning I did it every day, or I did it as needed, right? Rinse and repeat with prayer, meditation. And eventually, the compulsivity of it fell away, and it just became natural, right? It was like practices. I just had multiple practices to get to multiple depths within myself. And I just continued to do that. So if we go to step 10, it's on page 84, the second paragraph. This thought brings us to step 10. We suggest we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow. Grow. We're either growing or dying. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So that's what I continued to do. I continued to seek things out. I mentioned the coaching program, right? That was human potential coaching. How could I be at my human potential? How can I reach my human potential? But I also got that idea of being like a life coach and a health coach from sponsoring people. I liked it so much. I was like, I want to know more about this. That was a full 10-month program. It was like pretty vigorous. I was working full-time in a tech job and doing that as well. And then there was this opportunity to go into a self-actualization mentoring program. Self-actualization is the complete realization of one's potential and the full development of one's abilities and appreciation of life, right? This deep connection to life. And then I went on in that to a self-actualization teacher. And then I actually teach people from all around the world, like therapists and stuff, this kind of work. This work about being aware and present in each moment, right? And it all came from the learnings and the teachings of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the work of the Big Book. Yeah, and I also noted too, one of my greatest realizations, I was in meditation one time at a retreat in the like an hour outside of London in the UK at the self-actualization. And I got really deep within myself, and I realized, oh my goodness, because I was chasing goals, career goals and relationship goals and these whatever goals. And I realized, like, none of that matters so much. This is it, because I was just so deep. And the cool thing about this goal is there is no goal. It's just, it's infinite how my relationship with God can go. It's infinite how deep I can go within myself. Once I realize that because it's infinite, there is no goal to it, it just sets the whole thing at ease. In peace. That was probably in 2018, but it continues for a lifetime, and that's the new goal. Is there is no goal, and just go deeper and deeper, growing or dying. Just be growing and growing and growing in these things. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. A lot of that sounds, doesn't that sound like the steps that we just went through? Doesn't it sound like we've cleared up the big ball of mess that we made in our lifetimes, and now we're just doing it in real time? When I first came in, my sponsor suggested we go to a meeting. We went together every Friday night in this meeting, just focused on the 10th step, and then have different recovered people come in and talk about this. And when one of them said, "Yeah, it's about when you make a mistake within your day, once you're aware of it and realize it, you go to God, you go to another human being, and then you make amends. It's like doing the steps in real time, and that's the practice. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help." Love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. "For by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically." And isn't that the truth? I don't remember an instant where, oh my, you know, here it is. It went from I must have a drink to not. It just, it's a subtle change as I consider to pursue my relationship with God. "We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us." It's another gift. "Without any thought or effort on our part, it just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition." And that's what I set out to do, is just go deeper and deeper within myself to have a deeper relationship with God. And that's how today I keep a fit spiritual condition. "It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition." When I work with people, whether it's here or when I'm doing the self-actualization stuff, I always caution people, I think I mentioned it the first week, is right. What we're doing in this program is we're coming out of the ego mind and living in that egocentric existence and dropping into our centers, the centers of us, right? Living in our lower belly, our heart. And if we discontinue the practices, If I was to discontinue the practices of spiritual fitness too soon, the gravitational pull of the egoic mind is very, very strong. And over time, it's going to pull me back up, and I'm going to go back to those patterns. And I know that would be the case for me if I was to let up. So what I need to do is continue to practice. And eventually, that becomes the new way. New neural pathways are built within my brain, so that becomes the norm, is to use those practices instead of thinking about, oh, I should pray now. Prayer happens. Oh, I should meditate now. Meditation happens. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, and this is where when I work with people and they go, oh, what do I do? What are my practices? Well, here's what the book has practices, suggests as practices. And then as I went, I would just find things that work for me. What works for me? What makes me feel closer to God? What makes me feel closer to myself? And just continued to seek to find those things that worked. But when I started, this is the direction. This is where I began. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Right? We're looking at those specific things. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? What could we have done better, right? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? Excuse me. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. All things up in the ego mind, listening to our stories. Oh, what a shame, right? What a loser I am. No, we don't do that anymore. We're children of God. For that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So that's on retiring. Now we go into on awakening. Here's more direction. Here's the practice. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. When I teach the self-actualization stuff, we call the storytelling piece of the mind, right? The egoic mind. And then the part of the mind that's being referenced here, right, we call it the functional mind. We need this, right? We need it to keep a schedule, to be on time, to calculate things, to make reason and logic and discern and all those things. It's absolutely necessary, right? But when it's muddled with stories Like, I used to have all of these stories that would just cause me to be shameful. My only solution to it was to drink. And it was all ego-based. I was just in my own head all the time. So, but we still have this very useful, essential aspect of the mind. I just call it the functional mind. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. When I read that now, what that direction is telling me is to get present out of my head, into the body, into the heart. And that's where I'm at peace, right? And if something comes, I just simply welcome it now. If anger comes, I welcome it. If a story comes, I recenter myself in the body. And I rinse and repeat that activity as well as prayer. And it's talking about intuition as well, gut feelings. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. That's what I'm talking about. These practices become second nature. They fall away. The practices become our new norm. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. Neuropathways are being built. We've had this deep psychic change. Our brain's being rewired, and more we're in new patterns. Neuroplasticity. We've built new neuropathways in our brains. And the more we do it and continue on this path, and the deeper we go with our connection to God and ourselves, the more these pathways will become the norm. With the caution of don't disengage from the practices too soon. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. Have you ever asked yourself what your deepest commitment is? What's my deepest commitment? The first time I heard that, at a retreat in the UK, I immediately went to my head, and my response was, my deepest commitment is being of service to others. And it's true, that's an important value of mine, but it's not my deepest commitment. So the direction I got was to, that answer can't come from your head. That answer only comes from within, right? From presence. So I took some time with it, and got better at being present more and more, and deeper in presence. And I asked myself that, and what came up was freedom. And it's a real deep freedom, and I kind of use my functional mind to put words around it. It's everlasting, spacious freedom. The everlasting part is, right, I created fake freedom for 30 years when I was drinking, right? I would have, things didn't go my way. I'd drink, I'd feel okay. And I'd feel at peace. But it was fake. And then I'd wake up with a headache or whatever and the next day, and the problems would be worse. And with spaciousness, just tuning into spaciousness, seeing that spaciousness is always there, It allows everything to flow for me. And then freedom began with the freedom from self, my own mind. And then it's the feeling I cherish most. So that's my deepest commitment, is to that freedom, beginning with freedom from self. It's something you can ask yourself, right? From presence, what's your deepest commitment? What is your deepest commitment? There's no right answer, right? It very may well be being of service to others or love or whatever. But if it's coming from your head, it may not be the actual commitment. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. Go to page 87 at the bottom. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. And I just want to give another, a specific example. With meditation specifically, like when I first came in, I started meditating twice a day, every day, 20 minutes upon awakening, midday. And then as I started to go into other forms of learning from seeking, I learned other meditations. And now I allow the meditation to choose me. I don't know. I don't have any one thing that I do. So in other words, the compulsive act of meditating fell away. And now it's just I just know what to do, right? It's just this state of being where the body is listening to the mind, is talking to God, is everything just kind of intuitively know what to do. And there's all kinds of different things. Sometimes it's not even meditation. Sometimes it's breath work, right? And just getting trapped, I feel trapped energy in me. I'm going to do breath work to get that energy out. This type of stuff, right? Just as I went. But at first, it was twice a day, every day. Got to do it. Right, and that was fine. That was good use of the will, of my will, as I meditated in prayer as well. Right, upon awakening, prayer, praying the same old prayer, compulsively. Right, but now it's just a much freer, less compulsive way. But those neural pathways in my brain had to be formed in order for me to be able to do it. I needed to practice. To get good at something, I need to practice, and that's what I did. I just practiced early on and continued to do it, and then just kind of evolved into what it evolved into. And then God decides everything. My will is minimized. And just one thing also I wanted to... It's just something I learned along the way, just like 2 years ago, about neuroscience and the autonomic nervous system. Is we have this nerve in us, it's called the vagus nerve, and it connects directly to our brain just like the eyes do and the ears do, right? And it's kind of when we meditate, we go deep into the vagus nerve. That's where it gives us all these health benefits. But there's this phrase I read this thing that was just discovered in the 1990s called the polyvagal theory. In it, it's mostly about the vagus nerve. There's a phrase that goes, story follows state, meaning the stories that I create in my mind, they happen after my state is created. this vagus nerve and the autonomic nervous system is our safety network. It's creating this state of safety. If we don't feel safe, it's going to impact the stories, because the safety happens without us thinking about it. So we might always be, when I was actively drinking, I always felt like a lion was going to attack me. I was constantly in fear. And then what did I do? The only thing I knew to do was chug a lug, right? I'd grab the bottle and drink, and it would make me feel better until it didn't. So this vagus nerve and this meditation, which gets us into this great state of safety, allows for a much better story to be derived when we're in a position of safety. So I hope that makes sense. But the phrase is story follows state. If we're in a good state of safety, we're gonna have a much better story than if we're in fear or anger or something else. And that takes us to the final step of the book and the final growth step of working with others. Just first of all, the wording of it, right? Having had a spiritual awakening. Yes, I've had a spiritual awakening through a series of spiritual experiences. Is that true for me? Yes, that's true for me. As a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. One of the things I can remember from early sobriety, I'm in the home stretch of the 12 steps, right? I'm in my finishing up my first year of sobriety, working the steps. Not even, maybe 8 months, 10 months, whatever it was. And I had my ego mind had this notion that I have to complete these steps. And I couldn't find someone to work with, and I just really thought I had to find somebody to work with to complete the step, which of course is ridiculous. So what I did is I heard a guy named Jared was at this meeting, speaking at this meeting, and he just talked about how, yeah, whenever I see a new person, I hand them a book, and I give them a book, and I start thinking, oh man, that must be expensive, because my book was what, $30 or whatever. But then I go, let me just check this out, right, because I'd like to hand people a book. And then I saw they have little books, right? They have little books over there. I didn't know. I was too green for it. And I go on Amazon to buy the little big books, and I put in, I'd like 10 little big books. And it goes, hey, you can get 12 little big books for the price of 10 or something like that, right? So I go, that may, it's like a sign from God, 12 steps, 12 books, and I get the books. But the thing about doing that was really cool was that immediately that like need of me to finish the steps was gone. It was the willingness, right? Just like in the beginning, that willingness to have the books and hand them out to people took everything away, right? That's what God wanted me to do, is just be willing to help somebody else. So I would carry around the books, and I remember I gave a guy a little big book, and a couple weeks later he was sharing at a meeting, and he goes, you know, somebody gave me this book, I don't know who it was, and which makes it even cooler, right? He didn't know it was me, but I knew it was me. He was like, all right, cool. And he shared some insight of how it really helped him, and I just want to thank that person, he said. Right, but he didn't know it was me. It was great. And then once I was ready, then people were just coming up to me and asking me to help them out with the book, and then I just started taking them through and all that stuff. And the one thing that I learned pretty quick is I have nothing to do with the outcome of that person. I have nothing to do with it. My responsibility is to be here and, to the best of my ability, take them through this work and continue my deepening of my relationship with God, my relationship with myself, and my understanding of this work, and passing it on to others. And that's what I do. Page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. So when all else fails, this is what we do, is work with another alcoholic. Doesn't mean that working for a nonprofit or charity work is not going to be helpful to you, right? It's just saying this is above all, this is what we found helps the most. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can help. I can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see the fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. You must not miss this. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some here in these meetings by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, hospitals. They will be only not too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or a reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experiences, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. So this book is just pointing out there's something unique about me, there's something unique about you and you and you, right, that is unique to help this person or that person. God will pair us up and we'll get the help we need. But there's something unique about me that I can help certain people and you can help certain people. For time's sake, I just want to go to my favorite line. It's at the bottom of page 99 in the big book. So this actually speaks to my specific problem, right? The family was gone and what to do. But there's a particular line in there. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. I can attest to that. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. That can happen too. Remind the prospect, this is it, this is the line. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. And that's it, right? And the same with sponsorship. I'm a person, right? And it's not about me and the sponsee. It's about the sponsee and his relationship with God. And I kind of, as I was going through through this program, I realized, right, if the sponsor goes out and gets drunk, right? If I'm not on a fit spiritual ground, I might go too, right? And I just knew that. Somehow I knew that coming in. I'm just going to kind of finish up since we're at the bottom of the hour. Page 25, sentence above the great fact. We have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could not, never do by ourselves. So the reason I did the three-part story, it's summed up there, right? I couldn't do that. I couldn't have gotten through it. I didn't have a clue what to do. There was no type of handbook on it. But once I got here, I just trusted God and what happened happened, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. that, you know, I saw her yesterday. She was my little girl who was with me yesterday. From being on death's door back in 2012. So I appreciate you listening, and I enjoyed speaking here and going through everything thoroughly. So thank you very much.